Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastoma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay. So now we have Chaitanya Upanayam, Natyashastra, chapter 17, Qualities and Ornaments of Recitation. So now we're on vowels and consonants. The 14 sounds beginning with ah and ending with ow are known as vowels, and the group of sounds beginning with ka and ending with ha are known as consonants. Of the above mentioned, then you have the ah, ah, ee, oo, oo, like this, right? Of the above mentioned 14 vowels, 10 constitute homogeneous pairs, samana, of which the first ones are short and the second ones are long, right? So you have a, a, e, e, u, u, ri, ri, lri, lri. That's the first 10. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right? Like that. Then you have A, I, O, ow, those are combination of sounds. Those four. The first two sounds of each group of the stop consonants are known as unvoints, agosha, yadavas. You don't mention the Vishnu Janas and.
No, this is only about the vowels and consonants.
But Vishnu Janas are the vowels.
Okay, yeah.
Because there you can put in the footnotes. The point is that why they're Vishnu Janas, because you can't say the Hari, what do you call it? Means that the consonants are like the jivas, the living entities, because they serve the vowels. Without the vowels, they can't function. So that's why you even see is you don't necessarily have to mention it. You know, you have the letter. You don't, if it's short, you don't need to put anything after, because it can't be said without Vishnu. So in other words, the jiva can't function without Vishnu. So that's the whole thing in the grammar, is that it's all about Krishna consonants. Even that comes back to Vishnu, because we take it that the consonants are the main and the vowels are the secondary. But actually, it's the consonants are the main because they're accomplishing something. But it's the vowels that are the main, because that represents the Lord. Because without the vowel, how do you say it? Does that make sense?
Yes. Without all these are like first and we say ka.
Yeah, it just has the you know, ka, ka, ga, ka, na. Like that, because without the I, it just doesn't work. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you should put those things in then in footnotes. Does that make sense?
For me, the vowel represent Vishnu, Krishna, and the consonant is Jiva.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I think they're called the Hari Go. Hari. No, Hari Gosha is the other, Hari Khadga, Hari, like that. They all have these have their groups, that this half, that half, this one, that one, so they each have their different things that are all connected to the Lord, so all philosophically established. Does that make sense? So even the language, it's all about like that. So you don't get that in the modern. They drop it. Oh, it's not practical. That, but it, without, but here, it's like you can't say it without the vowel. It means the karmis will say that. You have to. But that's not a big deal. They don't get it that, no, you can't function without Vishnu. So he represents the vowels. Like that. Okay. The first two sounds of each group of the stop consonants are known as unvoiced, aghosha, yadava. It means aghosha is one group and yadava is the next?
No, aghosha is what the general way of, like, the Panini or somebody.
In yadava, aghosha.
Like,
and kosha. And the rest of the group are called voiced, gosha and gopala. Right? So then you're going to have everything here we have in the list. Like, you have the ka, ga, ga, na. Right?
Yes.
So ka is ka is unvoiced. No, it's going to be aspirated. This is a matter of aspirated. Okay.
This means that the first vowel ka is agosha and the second ka is yadava.
No, I think it's meaning the ka is yadava. And the gagha is gopala. But at the same time, it's the whole ka, cha, ta, ta, pa, ya, sha, that's one group.
Mm-hmm.
Then your ka, cha, ta, ta, pa, ra, sha is one group, like this. So each one is a group up and down, right? Then the first two are in one group, and the second two are in another group, right? Then you have going across. Then you know, kavarga, chavarga, tavarga, like that. Then they have another grouping. So like that, all these things are there, and they all have. Okay. Stops. That's all the better we have is stops. What does it say in Harinamamrita? Yeah, you should check that. Okay. The consonants V voiced and voiced and unvoiced. Okay. Then you have, so that's the two groups going vertical, right? Then horizontally, then you're going to get guttural, you know, kavarga, palatal, chavarga, cerebral or retroflux.
Yeah.
Tavarga, dental, tavarga, labial, pavarga, nasal, nabes will be all there, na-na, na-na, ma, like that. Sibilant, that'll be sha-sha-sha, and visarjaniya, ha.
Uh-huh.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah? More or less.
More or less. Maybe on the more side than the less side. Yeah, so more or less means more of it means less sense. Okay, so looking at the chart means means k. So they're all but velular. What is it? Does it give another thing for velular? Velar, excuse me.
Guttural.
Guttural, yeah. It's all of that in the back. K, k, g, g. You see, is that the tongue is in the same place. Basically, to say all four of them, ka ka ga ga, yeah, right, and also the na.
Yes,
it's in the same place. So the tongue adjusts a little bit, but the basic, it's all in the back.
Yes,
right. Then you have the palatal, cha cha ja ja nya. So then the tongue is a little towards the roof of the mouth, cha cha ja ja nya.
Yes.
Right? Then the retroflex. What else it calls it? Cerebral. Ta ta da da na. Because it goes up into the head. Ta ta da da na.
Okay.
Right? Then the dental. Then we see is with the tongue on the teeth. That's stopping. Ta ta da da na. Then the labial. So that'll be with the lips. Pa pa ba pa ma. Right, the semi-vowels, ya-ra-la-va, and then the sibilants and visarjaniya, whatever. Sha, sha, sa, and aha. Right? So that's all the sounds. Then you can combine them and get other, like sha, gya, you know, like that. Then you get the you get those specific sounds, you know. And so then that's That's everything like that. So, in other words, if you understand that properly, then you can say it properly. Yes. So that when you speak on the stage, you'll say properly. So the whole point is you should have proper, you know the sounds and proper enunciation of the sounds. Yes. Otherwise, then nobody can understand what you're talking about.
Yes.
Also, it has something to do with that how you produce sound. Also, whether you want to produce from the stomach or from the just your throat or from the head, accordingly. If you want to call somebody who's very far, then the sound should come from the head. And you want to call somebody who's like very near, you speak from the throat. And for singing and other purposes, and sound should come from the stomach.
Or if you want somebody to not do something.
Yes.
I think Shatadanya Prabhu was going in Japan door to door. And somehow or another, he didn't know, but then he knocked on one door and all that, and it was the house of one famous sumo wrestler. You know, one of those big guys they wear, you know, it's like, I don't know, some ridiculous, like 400 pounds, like 600 kilos or 800, something ridiculous. And he just basically told him, go away. But you know how, you keep trying to sell it. You know, he's kind of sitting there and turned around, no, you know, like this, go away. And he kept talking, so then he turned around and whacked the mat with his hand. Just made a, like that, like that. Okay, you know, keep your eyes on him, don't turn away, keep back up till you go. Bow, close the door, yeah. Well, yeah.
So Maharaj, when we say, for example, Jnana,
yeah,
I think there are different pronunciations. No?
It means we have what we do, and then there's going to be that one guy who nobody cares less about him. And so he has to establish his own position as a Muni. So he comes up and says, no, the actual real way to say it is. And they say it in some weirdo way. So everybody else says it how we're saying it. And they show some technical thing how it's just... And it may make sense in their local language, but not in Sanskrit. Sanskrit has its natural form. It's a very sweet thing.
So can we say that the right pronunciation is Jnana?
Yes, Jnana.
Jnana.
Means when you put the J and that Na together as one letter...
Yes.
Then you have gya,
yes.
Like that.
Yes.
Yeah? Like that. So it's a combination of the things. So the ja and the ya, you know, with that nasal aspect of the what's that? Cha cha ja ja nya. Nya. So you gya.
Yes.
So that's what you're doing. That's why we put the J and the N with the squiggle over it. And everybody in India will agree with that, but there's one or two pundits just to establish themselves as the most important of everybody and how everybody else is wrong. They'll say these other things, and we couldn't care less.
But I know quite a few devotees not pronouncing the same way this word.
They can do whatever they like. This is how it was introduced, this is how we taught. Prajumna showed this, Prabhupada agreed with this and all that. And then, maybe 30 years ago or 25 years ago, then someone came across some guy in Gujarat or somewhere that said, oh, no, it's not sounded like that. You guys got it all wrong. Like that, as if the whole world's going to fall apart because you do it like this, you know. You know, you put the danyapata first. I mean, you put the chutney first, and then the danyapata. No, we put the danyapata, then we put the chutney on top. And other than that, it's just completely wrong. You just throw it out. It's just like nobody. Yeah, it's like one of those. Yeah. So we couldn't. These doomsday. We couldn't care less. This is what's given. This is what we do. All these things are there. It's just for false ego to show. Oh, that's wrong. To throw doubt. Because all these things, all they do is throw doubt. You know, it's just like in Bengali. Then you have, you don't say the ksh sound. You just say ka. So lucky. You know, and so from the British get lucky. Because lucky means is Lakshmi, so money. So they say somebody got lucky means he got money. So then that comes into the they pick it up from there. You know, so the point is that's how it would be said there. And that's yeah, for the Bengali it's said like that. You know, but others will say, no, you know, the A is not a proper thing, you know, we have to use an O there, but O is a different sound in Bengali. So who says that actually doesn't know Bengali? You can tell the difference between A and O. If you can't tell the difference, then don't present yourself as a pundit. You know, some get more, but even that will be more of an O for those who speak like, oh, lulu. You know, if you have a mouthful of pawn and you're trying to talk like that, then, yeah. So that's the thing, is they get into these things, and it just creates, so some of them, they'll only write in Bengali the short A's as O's. But then what do you do when there's an O? You know, so there's a reason that, you know, people, you know, pundits sat around and sat and worked out the letters like this and how it goes into English. And we use it like that. We pronounce it like that. If you want to, our line will pronounce, this is the way Narayan grammar pronounce. If you want to do it as, I don't know whose that is, but it's not Narayan's. I doubt it's even Shiva's. It might be Yamaraja's or Kuvera's or, you know, there's 8 kinds of Sanskrit. So maybe in Kuvera's Sanskrit, that's how he talks. But we're following Narayan. So it means they'd be fine. Some pundits in the local area do it that way. That's fine. You know. So it's just, yeah. So people have those different things. Oh, this is all wrong. So this is quite external when these are taken as the thing. So just like, you know, this religion's right, that one's wrong, this, that. It's in the same category. It just comes down to mundane morality because it's important to them. Therefore, it's like that. And if them, this is another thing. If locally from where you're from, that's how you pronounce it, you say it like that. Like Prabhupada would say Sanskrit, like Bengali. And that's fine because he's from Bengal. But if you're not from Bengal, just say Sanskrit like Sanskrit. You know, and if, okay, someplace in Rajasthan or Punjab or Gujarat, then they say it differently, then you do that. But that's local. They're trying to make it out that, no, this is that. No, it's not. You know, otherwise, why is it when you're pronouncing the Vedic verses, they don't say it like that? No one says it like that. So then that's where it comes from. So then if it comes down to the classical, then why would it change? So yes, according to the local thing, then you get the different languages. So in other words, these languages are Prakrit off of particular off of particular shakas. That particular shaka, there's variations what you can use, so that shaka may give you then a particular Prakrit, a particular local language. Does that make sense? Yes, yeah, so then you can do that, but don't try to make it that's the... like that. So we've been given it like this. This is how we use it.
Yes. That's why it's told that without understanding of chandas, actually Vyakarana and then other, the whole Sanskrit is not complete.
Yes.
None of the classical Sanskrit people, they ever touch even chandas.
Yes.
Because then it is so complicated for them. But if you know the chandas, then like if you spell it wrong, then it doesn't fit into the whole meter material.
Yeah, you can't say it.
Like all the North Indians, it's very famous. They call Ram, R-A-M, they write. Mm-hmm. And they just say, stop, Ram. Mm-hmm. It's short vowel, Rama.
Yeah.
And all over the South, they do that. And then East, they do. And West, some part, they do. But as soon as we put in our YouTube channel also, we put Gurukula. So many people, why are you adding this A? You're like, no, Western attitude.
Tell them something, it's just not Western. It says, that's Sanskrit. Tell them something. It says, you know, you're from India, why don't you know this? It means, this is Sanskrit. What you speak is Prakrit. Hindi is Prakrit. You have to remember, Hindi is 40% Urdu, which is not exactly. And when it comes down to, okay, if it comes down to, you know, you're following Western culture, not necessarily Mughal culture, so then why are you complaining? Even if you say it's Western, then why, if it's added by Western, why wouldn't you take it? But you're cutting it off because of the Mughals.
I replied like that. I mean, oh, it's very nice that I knew the new knowledge.
Yeah, so the point is it's just like that. It comes from there. So other languages are more like 90%, but Hindi is only 60% Sanskrit. Like that, because the original North Indian language is Braj Bhasha, So that's also 90%. So if you know Bengali, Brajbhasa, Gujarati, they're all, you can talk, the others will understand what you're talking about. You can't speak in it. You know, be like, let's Spanish and Portuguese or Spanish and Italian. So they can understand what you're talking about. And even I heard some of the dialects of French and southern France, they can understand what they're talking about. They can't speak like that. It means they'll talk in their language, you'll talk in yours, but you can communicate.
Yes.
Like that. So that means all the Prakrit languages you can. But Hindi is in another category. That's why no one really likes it. You know. So if they wanted to make one language that was all India, it should have been Sanskrit. That's the all Indian language. You know. What's that? But politicians have other ideas.
Well, they're trying to get back Maharaj. They're trying to get back to Sanskrit slowly.
Yeah. Case endings. As they, Vibhanti, distinguish between the meaning of an inflected word or words with reference to the core meaning or gender, they are called Vibhakti, case endings. Right? So you have a case ending, you have the root word. And then by adding these endings, then you're going to expand on it and give it a different kind of meaning. You know, like going. You know, it has a slightly different, you know, like that. You know, or gone. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that's what all these help distinguish the fine points between us. The main word is there, and then you have the endings. Euphonic combination. Yeah, so it says case endings here because you have to make sure you use them, because otherwise then you might drop them off. The euphonic combination, where a separated vowel or consonant, sandhiyate, combines with another, by coming together, yogataha, in a word or words, it is called sandhi, euphonic combination. Right, because you have letters come together. Like sometimes you have two words and then you put them together as one word. You can say them separately as two words, but generally people will tend to say them.
Yes.
You know, like that.
Well, also related to this vibhaktis, generally in English, when we have to say the case endings, instead of giving endings, we say different. We use a different word, like an adjective word or something to express that.
Mm-hmm.
But in Sanskrit especially, it's always the same word, then you add something. And I have seen same in some of the local languages. In Telugu also it's the same. That's why many people, they never learn Telugu. Because then if you don't say it properly, then it changes the whole meaning of the word and everybody starts laughing.
Laughing, yeah, because you just said something. Something's
foolish. They cannot figure out why is it so difficult, but because the language in Hindi is also not much used with this endings proper, but all the local language like Odia,
because they're Prakrit. Yeah. So they will be more careful. They just simplify. Prakrit means that they've simplified. Instead of, let's say, having so many kinds of grammatical for each separate word, they'll do them all as one group. So it's same grammar, just they've simplified it. Instead of being so detailed about each word, they'll put all these words in one group and say it in that way. And that way it becomes. So that's what I was saying, is that 10% means that those finer points of grammar aren't applied. But otherwise, the root words, how they're dealt with, everything's the same. That's why if you know any local language means other than Hindi, well, even with Hindi, because it's still based on Sanskrit, but especially if you know any Prakrit language, learning Sanskrit is actually very easy. You're just adding in a little bit more rules, and then and the pronunciation is more, you know, how you say, clear, you know, original. But otherwise, it's very easy. You know, like they do these Sanskrit courses, 10-day courses. Someone from a local language in 10 days actually can speak. But, you know, maybe other languages other than English in the Western, they have more of a grammar. I think they can catch it, especially I think Germans. They somehow or another very much are able to catch like that. But English, because there's no real connection between these things. You know, in their arrogance, they'll always say there is and try to point out, but in actuality, not so much.
I have also, like, Sanskrit is a language, they have three vachanas. Like, this, in most languages, they have singular and plural.
Yes, yes.
Sanskrit has, like, singular, plural, and also dual.
Uh-huh. Do you know why it has dual?
No, I wanted to ask that.
Is it dual?
In Bhagavatam, it's used, like, very few places, whenever it's, like, Krishna Balaram or Radha Krishna.
So does that, that sheds no light?
No, I just wanted to confirm.
No, that use brain. There's gears, you know gears?
Yeah.
Gears turn?
Yes.
And when they turn, things move? Engage the gears in your brain. So Radha and Krishna, do they have, are they together as like one aspect, but they're two people as one?
Yes.
Right? So, which would you use? Plural?
No.
Singular?
No.
Okay. And Krishna Balaram is brothers. Do you use singular?
No.
You use plural? No. So you use dual. So it brings out relationship. Singular, you're on your own. Plural as a group, but it's not as personal. But dual, then it's very it's more, but it's personal. So it has a very, it's about the relationship. Right? That, or, you know, they're showing something, you know, Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yago, like that. You put them together. So the two Raghus, or the two Bhattas, you know, or the two idiots, you know, like that. You can say it in dual case. Bring some special flavor.
Is it related to the Sandhi?
No, it'll be the ending. The sandhi will be when two different words come together. Like, I am going to go. I'm going to go. That'll be sandhi.
Two words together means maybe a little short.
Yes, it drops off something, or something, or, you know, if an A connects with another letter, either if two A's are there,
yes,
then it becomes long A.
Yes, yes.
You know, or if it's something else, it becomes, you know, these combination letters that the I O ow, like that. So it just shows that. So Sanskrit already has what we do with other languages and make slang. It's already built in. So there's no slang.
Yes.
Thousands of years, there's no slang in Sanskrit.
Yes.
Because what you do, it's already there.
Yes.
You know, it's just like on these letters. You know, ta, da.
Yes.
Like that. You'll see that when people are speaking slang, they'll switch these, whichever is easiest to say.
Okay.
Right. Like it's a plus U gives O. Like Krishna plus Udaya will give Krishna Udaya.
Yeah. Instead of saying Krishna Udaya,
yes.
Krishna Udaya, because that you would say, but it's already been made, so it's done. So it's not slang, but it comes out. It's poetic, but it shortens it, so it's easier to say and things like that. But at the same time, it's in the non-Vedic languages, or let's see, non-Sanskrit. Then it's generally the combinations of these where you drop things and all that are done by the uneducated or less educated. But in Sanskrit, it's those who are more educated, they can do this. And then by them speaking, everybody else picks it up, and that's how it's used. So it becomes the you know, just the practice.
Also, it's very consistent. Like in English, we see a lot of...
Oh, no, totally inconsistent. You can't tell what's what. Only by context can you tell what you're saying in English.
The intent is different.
Yeah, so it's very difficult. Like that. Some can learn very well and use it very nicely, but that's because they come closer to using the grammar as it should be used. But where are they learning that from? Not from English, they're learning it from Latin. Like before it was, English was taught in connection with Latin, so you had more of an understanding. Nowadays, they don't bother with that. I'm sure at some levels, higher levels, they do that. You know, so because Latin has more of a grammar that's closer to English. Well, English, you apply grammar. English is a spoken language. that you apply spelling and grammar to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they have problems with the consistency of how to do that, especially spelling. Because English has a certain amount of words.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, let's say, refined things like eating, cooking, clothes, that they pick up from the French or from the Italians. You know, someone with a little bit that knows how to do something more with vegetables than just put them in a pot and boil them. Like that. I think everything goes in a pot and you boil it. So, like that. So, then you have to take words from other languages. Now, you could say them like those other languages say it, or they will say it in the English, and then the problem comes is do they keep the original spelling but say it how they would in English, so the spelling and how you say it has nothing to do with each other, or sometimes they change. So, and it's inconsistent. Some things are changed, some things are not. You know, some you say, some you don't. Some will say like that, some won't. You know, so it's like the government, you know, somebody in the government kicks out who's in the government and takes over, right? So, C-O-U-P. So then, I think the original, it comes from French, is coup, right? Yeah, so I always heard it as coup, and everyone in my, but I also hear some talk about a coup. And so in English, if you say it's a coup, you're not wrong. It may not be how people who know the origin would say it, but it's not wrong. So then,
French when you can say when you say.
So then it's like that. You have a so many of those words are like that. Some maintain this original spelling and are said in the original way. Some are keep the original spelling and not said in the original way. Some keep the original spelling but are not. You know, it's just all combinations are there. So then with time they just kind of work it out. Like before us for an I sound, generally the Y was used. You look at old writings, you know, go back, you know, 300-400 years, Y is the standard instead of an I. Like if you have a bit, B-I-T, it would be a Y, B-Y-T. Yes.
I read an article where it says that the way that Indians spell English, that is the easiest way to understand and how to write exact words. Because they try to use the Sanskrit kind of pronunciation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be, if they did that, use this as the letters, and then therefore made the things, it would be much better. But it also would sound, it would go back to sounding more like German and all the things like that. Like that. Because, you know, they don't say all the letters like French, but they don't pronounce it like French. Same time as they, you know, they may, you know, or they use all the letters like in German, but don't say it like German. And most all languages don't have many ways of saying one vowel. You have one way of saying it. You know, if it's a, everything's a. If it's a, everything's a. If it's a, everything's a. So that's the, like, America, that one's called America, you're using two A's there. So, you know. And you have that, what do you call that, that emphasis. That's not necessarily Sanskrit. There's no emphasis. You just have longer. So then, you know.
Yes.
So most people say America, because that's actually how it's spelled.
Yes.
But, you know, if you're American, they say America.
Yes.
Yeah. Let them know. Yeah. So that's the point, is you can apply grammar to it, and people who are more educated in it will understand grammar going back to languages that have grammar.
Yes.
And then they can apply that in English, which is not a problem. We're just recommending take that understanding of grammar back to Sanskrit.
Yes.
Then apply it in English. Then you'll see it makes much more sense. It's much more easy to deal with. Sanskrit has more grammatical elements than you have in English. Like you said, the dual case and so many other things they don't have. So, you know, different considerations of that. And so, but if you do it from Sanskrit, it's so much easier to understand. If you learn grammar from Sanskrit and applied in English, grammar is really easy. Otherwise, it's one of the more difficult subjects because they've applied grammar to it rather than, you know, how you say, start with an original. And then you're applying a grammar that's not the original grammar. You know, from grammar, you know, from Sanskrit, then you're going to get Greek or Latin or things like that. From that, then you're going to get the other Romantic or Slavic languages and this and that. So it keeps transforming. So if you just, any of those languages from Sanskrit will be much easier. Because whatever is there is already there in Sanskrit. Just sometimes where Sanskrit makes a difference, they don't. Where Sanskrit doesn't, they do. Yeah. So like that. It just makes it more simple.
Yeah.
Done. Okay. Then compound words. The samasa, compound words, which combines many words to express a single meaning and suppresses affixes, has been described by the experts to be of six kinds, such as tatparusha and so on. Right? So you have the case ending, you have how the sounds come together, and you have how words can come together. Like that.
Can we say that? Radha-Krishna is a compound word?
You can make it, yes, compound, but it also has to do with how it'll be like in puja, Radha-Krishna Bhyam, or Radha, yeah, like that. So then as that means it'll be from the dual. Yeah. With these rules of grammar, Shabda Vidhana, which include minute details and suggestiveness, one should make a composition by combining words in verse or putting them loosely in prose. Yes. So the idea is that you're going to consider all this, means how it'll be pronounced, what it'll be like that, because you also have to consider is that will they be able to tell what it is?
Yes.
Because from a distance, you know, some subtleties you may not catch, so you want to do. But so in Sanskrit, because of the chanda and these other things, and the grammar, then you can understand what it is. But if you're using another language, you want to be very careful that what you're saying will be able to be understood, and it will have that ability to project. Certain sounds project better than others, and so then considering that, then you would do. And then how it makes it nice, you want to bring it more poetic, you want to make it more rough, you want it like this, like that. So you see, is even in regular, many times, and depends on the background or the experience exposure. That some, like say you're saying something and you're explaining it in prose in many words, and then you know someone's you know kind of not quite sure. So then you say it in a poetic aspect. You know, it's like a phrase that everybody says. You know, better safe than sorry. You know, that one to explain it. So many words, and you say it like that, or you know. How you say? Yeah. Otherwise, not getting necessary pleasant ones comes out. But like that. You know. Is that something? Yeah. Yeah, I'll say another one is. Yeah. So you understand the principle.
And you mentioned, I don't remember, what is the meaning of chanda?
Chanda means meter.
Meter.
That's the next point here, meter, metric patterns.
Okay.
The meter is, let's say you have a verse, Anastup, so it has eight syllables in a line. And within that, then, depending on what it is, that there's so many forms of that, depending where the long and short is.
Yes.
Does that make sense? And so these different patterns in that, like Gita is all with either in eight syllables or ten syllables. Per line. But within that, it's not necessarily always one exact chanda. It'll be in that group, but it'll have some you know, how they're put together is sometimes slightly different. Because you can do all four lines of this exact same, or you can have the first two is one and the second two is another, even though they still all have eight, but it's slightly different one. Or you can do each one has different, but you can't do within one different. Because otherwise, then you can't identify what it is. Does that make sense? So you have these options of how you can play and deal and all that. So Bhagavatam uses, even though we see is that it has 8, it has 10, it has 11, it has 12, it has 14, like that. But and then you have the prose, right, in the fifth canto and that. But according to experts in chanda, there's about 500 different chandas used. In Bhagavatam. Because within that, that's the major category. It has eight syllables. Within eight syllables, then you have so many kinds of chanda. Mm-hmm. you know, on what's long and short, like that. So people who know that, then they go. So, but of this, you have, I think there's 18 main chandas. There, Rupa Goswami is given this 18 main. You have so many, but you know, main ones will be used as that. Like you see, many times is that the one that matches with the particular personality. Like whenever Brahma speaks, it's always in the 14 meter. I mean, 14 syllable. Like in Govinda prayers. You'll see is that whenever Brahma's speaking, you can always just use the Govindam tune to say it. Like that. Very rare, it's different. You know, so different. Yamaraj will speak in one way, Indra in another, like that. Shiva in another. Because they all have their own grammar. So there's 8 kinds of grammar. So then they'll...
But when you say, Maharaj, that, for example, in one
Sanskrit
sentence, but one line, it is 8...
No, eight syllables.
Eight syllables, yes.
Yeah, and depending upon that, it's got 8 syllables, and then it's in a pattern of shorts and longs in a particular way, and we'll say it's this chanda. Does that make sense?
When we see, like, in Gita or Bhagavatam, we have in the transliteration, we have 4 lines, but I think in Sanskrit, it's only 2 lines.
Actually 4 lines.
But it's 4 lines, but the 2 go together.
But it's originally it's 4 lines.
It depends upon the particular scripture and where they do it, how they break it. You know, what Veda is there. Like I think in Yajus, it'll always be... it'll be broken as this. Each one will be its own part. I think in Rig, then it's not. It'll be the 2 lines or 1. So just where it goes back to. Like that. The point is you're going to pronounce it, those 8, then the next 8. But
yes.
Then that ends something, because that's also, is that, see, is that those first 2, those first line, the last syllable, depending on what it is, it may connect to the beginning of the next
yes.
line.
Yes.
But when it comes to the end of that line, where there's a bar,
yes.
you won't connect it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like that. Most don't connect,
yes.
but I'm saying they can be.
Yes, yes.
Does that make sense? So it's just mainly that's more where it is how, where it connects across, where it doesn't connect across. You know, definitely if it has a double one, then that's it. That's finished. That statement's made. Then moves on to the next one. So that's why you see sometimes these different listings for Taittiriya Upanishad. Like the numberings and all that. Because sometimes those verses are very, very big. But within it, it has so many, you know, single lines. So you could have one that goes like half a page or so like that. And so then they may number those, each one of those different, instead of just saying this is one shloka.
Yes, yes.
You know, so then they'll give this as parts of the shloka. So it'll be 3-1, 3-2, 3-3, 3-4. But it's all just the third shloka. You know, so then it'll be different than if it's just, because generally you say 1-3, then you think it's a different section, but there it's meaning just in the same shloka. So some may different sections, some may different shlokas, so it's just different ways to. So it's just a matter of you see what's there, that's how it's done, that's what we use. Like that. Doesn't really matter to us. You know what I'm saying? It's not a thing, no, it always has to be like this, everybody's wrong. You don't need to do that. So, metric patterns, verses 36 to 102, chapter 15. Okay, so this is the next chapter. So we finished that previous chapter.
It's also chapter 15.
It's also 15.
We're doing chapter 15 to 17 together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but here it said 15.
Some verses next will be from 17 chapters, that's why.
Okay.
16 chapter we didn't include because it gives all what you said about the details of the metrical patterns and examples. Like Anustup, it gave like 10 types of Anustup.
Yeah, there's examples. There's so many kinds. It's giving there 10, I think there's more.
Yeah, whatever.
Like that. But there's so many, because just how you put, like say, too short, too long, too short, too long. You know, one short, one long, one short, one long, then combinations, all these different things, and they all come out. You know, but you call it all just anustu. But within it, it actually is technogatic. Sometimes people call it by the technical name and you don't even know what they're talking about. You think, well, no, but it's an anustu. Well, that's the category. Eight verses. Eight syllables.
Eight syllables.
Yeah. Right.
Gayatri is six syllables. Gayatri is six.
Six.
Six times four, or you can put eight times three.
Yeah. Generally, it's eight times three. So you have these different what's there and how it goes together. Like that, you have, you know. Yeah, there's so many. I don't remember. Padas are inflected words which are composed into two kinds of poetry, namely those metrically used in verses and those loosely put together in prose. Right, so the means when you're using the meter, then it'll come there, but you can still have it poetry that the last one rhymes, something rhymes, or you know, some aspect that has a little bit of poetic saying, but it's not according to the chanda. Like that, specifically. Padas, words used loosely in prose, are not systematically combined, have not the number or their syllables regulated, and they contain syllables required only to express the meaning. Right, so they're not necessarily. That's why when you're doing it in the meters, or even in this, you choose a word that will, you know, like say in modern poetry that has the rhyming, something rhymes at the end. So another word might be more exact, but yes, this word works. And so in poetry, that's why it doesn't matter. As long as it rhymes, yes, it basically says what you want to say, and then yes, it's considered okay. So you can do all kinds of stuff in poetry.
Poetic license.
Yeah, poetic license. Yeah, it's a certain kind of. Yeah. Syllabic meters are of three kinds, namely even, sama, semi-even, ardhasama, and uneven, vishama. The meters in which all the four padas, quarters, are similar are called even meters. The meters in which the two alternate padas are similar, while the two contiguous padas are not similar, are called semi-even, ardhasama. It means like the first and the third will be similar, the second and fourth won't be. The first one is sama, means 1, 2, 3, 4 are all the same.
Yes.
Then you have, what do you call it? 1, 3, 2, 4. 1, 3 is the same, but 2, 4 are the same, but different from 1 and 3.
Yes. Yes.
Like that. So it's semi. Like,
you know. Yes.
And the meter in which all the padas are dissimilar is called uneven, vishama. Like that. An even meter is defined by defining one of its padas, while uneven meter requires the definition of all its padas. And from a definition of the two padas, the semi-even meter is known. Right, so you define that, then you know what it is. You know, so then you say it's, you know, how it is. Riti. Having understood the rules of grammar related to formation?
Formation.
You were working so hard at this that you were foaming at the mouth. So when someone's foaming at the mouth, then he has proper formation. Okay. And the metrical patterns of verses. In the next chapter, 17, the author explains their application in dramatic composition, kavya. First, he details the characteristics of a good poetry. Here you could say, take out A, just of good poetry. Right? That's the point, English. Makes no sense. They'll have applied some grammar to it, and then they'll always tell you, oh, that's not a word, when actually it is a word, you know, and stuff like that. So, yeah. And then elaborates on the ornaments, qualities, and faults of a dramatic composition and their role in expressing appropriate sentiments. So then all these things, how they affect, you know? So they're only mentioned because they have some effect in application, you know, on the audience and in the book like that, to express what you want to say.
Also, we can understand that Siksha and Vyakarana, they're just the basic knowledge. Their application and then getting the taste is
in kavya. Yeah, kavya, yeah. So you're learning siksha, chanda, vyakara, nirupa, so that you can do chanda. Yeah?
Of course.
Obvious. Yeah. Obvious. Siksha means like you said, is how the ending syllable, how syllables combine together like that. It means you have two words, how they connect, how they don't connect, and that, how to connect words. You know, how the syllables are, individual syllables are pronounced, like this first thing of these charts, this is siksha, but then how that in words, they combine together. Like, you know, how syllables are said and combined. That could be siksha. Chanda will be also the aspect of the syllables, but how many syllables and what's long and short, you know, whether it's all even, whether it's semi-even or non-even, like that. That'll be chanda. Vyakarana will be the grammar on what it is, how the word is formed, you know, and how it would be used in connection or with the other words, like that. In other words, the more practical, technical application. And nirukta then will mean the vocabulary, the root words, or what they're from. What does the root mean? And that, when you apply these different grammatical rules, what do you come up with? Right? Does that make sense? So that's that. So all of that together now being used in practical language, you know, when it's done in a poetic or nice way or refined way, that's called kavya or poetry. Because here poetry means the general, just the application of it so it comes out, you know, properly sounding and correct. It doesn't necessarily mean everything rhymes. And in English, it says that's all you have. That's the only thing in poetry. But someone speaks very eloquently, that would be called poetry in the Sanskrit. So in other words, eloquent speech, you know, like that. Yes?
Like when you learn Sanskrit first, advanced level of Vyakarana is where the Kavya is taught. Practically none of the classical Sanskrit, nobody learned that.
No, they don't get to that. Because they just, as long as they can figure out what page to turn to in Moni or Williams, they're good. So more than that, what's the Kavya, what's being said? That's why sometimes you get some really, we saw it a little bit. So we're dealing with very fine points of sentiment, but the words being used are very gross because that's just what the dictionary says.
Yes.
You know, it's just like that example of Ramanujacharya and his guru. I don't remember the word, but something to do with
kapit. Kapit was just something.
Yeah, it's something that basically said that depending upon how you take the word and how you bring it up, then you could get the red backside of a monkey, or you could be the red like the lotus, who's the friend who has the sun of his as its friend. So when you're talking about Krishna's eyes, it'll be that pinkish color like the rising sun, that's, you know, the color of the lotus. That's what it means. But his guru, because he's just a grammarian, you know, he'll probably know, you know, kavya like this, but it's just he it's just technical. There's no taste, there's no understanding of the culture that is being applied into it. Then he says that Krishna's eyes are red like the backside of a monkey. You know, and it may be the same color, but that's not what we're referring to. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is poetry is using the right words. You know, that's what's important. So even if, like, say, something is not in a nice you can say rough things in a fine way. So that's kavya. And so that's what you come to, is that you want to hear that. So unless a character is known for their roughness, then only they would speak in a rougher way. But then that's that person. Everybody else would speak in a more cultured way, because the idea of upliftment is to be more cultured. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, someone can be rough and they become more cultured. You know. Like Pygmalion or something, but you know, you have to move up. Yeah. So is that good? Good. Okay. Verses 43-86, chapter 17. Four kinds of ornaments, figures of speech. Four kinds of ornaments available in drama are simile, upama, metaphor, rupaka, condensed expression, deepaka, and alliteration, yamaka. Simile. Yeah, it's come. See, this letter here is in Sanskrit to be e.
Which one was it?
So in Sanskrit would be simile.
Okay.
But in English you're saying simile. But then now it could be an e, it could be an e. Sometimes it's even an a. Like that. What do you need it for? There's already one there, you know. When in a poetic composition anything is compared on the basis of some similarity, it is an instance of simile, upama. It relates to quality and form. So where you're seeing something is common in form, something is common in quality, then you can show the comparison of the two. Like that. So then that'll be a simile. This composition comparison may be of one. This comparison may be of one with one or many.
One to many. Maybe of one to many, we can say, Maharaj.
Or many with one. Yeah, one with... comparison may of...
One with...
This comparison may be of one... what do you call it? Maybe one item or one thing with many, or of many with one. Or of many with many. It can be one with one with many, many with one. Let me see. Okay. One with one with many,
yes.
Many with many, or many with one.
Yes.
Yeah. So within similes, you can do that. They compare one person with a group.
Yes.
Compare a group with one person.
Yes.
Compare one person with one person,
yes.
Or one group with one group.
Yes.
You know, so like you could say Philistines and Cretans. You know, so two groups, many and many, but you compare them. They are very similar.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Examples of these follow. Your face is like the moon, one compared with one. Right? Stars shine like the moon, many compared with one. Having an eye like that of a hawk, a peacock, and a vulture, one compared with many. And elephants are like clouds, many compared with many. Yeah, so you see these things. Very important in here, because I want to say it now before it comes, you know, so that nothing comes up. In this, it's very important to note that these are poetic expressions, but it's not that you're not talking about reality. You know, I'm comparing the elephants to the clouds. It doesn't mean that I'm not talking reality. I'm just talking about it in a poetic way.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, so same way with metaphors and all these other things. So we have to be very, very careful, because in Sanskrit everything's done in poetics.
Yes.
That we can't take it that it's not real.
Yes.
Right? And therefore give our own interpretation like the Mayavadis do, and, you know, these other schools do. So that's one of the you have to be careful, it's a major thing, like some people say is, oh, story Paranjana is it's a metaphor, so it's not real. But the conversation between Prachina Barhishat and Narad Muni took place. And Narad Muni was explaining it so that it was understood, all these things, how they connected to his life. So the metaphor was how his life compared to these other things. And then he's supposed to get some self-realization from that. But to say, oh, it's just a metaphor, and therefore we can throw it out. So then that means we either come from a very gross existence where nothing has any fineness to it, or we are, how you say, have enough education to be dangerous, not enough to actually be educated. We have to be very, very careful about that.
When you say Vaishnava is poetic,
It means he can speak nicely. This is what it means.
Yes.
It doesn't mean he's just saying everything in rhyme or,
yes.
You know, like that. It means that he can say things nicely.
Yes.
Like that. That's that. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada.